This is File 91. This is Jean McMillan. I am interviewing Michael J. Flint about his boyhood and other things that he has done throughout his life. Today's date is March 11th, 2015, and we'll start with the genealogical information. What is your name?
My name is Michael John Flint.
And what is your birth date?
I was born on December 3rd, 1958.
And where were you born?
I was born at Sharon Hospital.
Your parents' names?
My parents were Marion Flint, commonly called Susie, and my father was Calvin Flint.
And your mother's maiden name was Butler?
It was Butler, yes.
Okay. Do you have siblings?
Yes, I do.
And would you name them, please?
I have two older brothers, Calvin and Raymond, and a younger brother, Brian, and a younger sister, Susan.
And tell me your educational background.
I went to Salisbury Central School and graduated.
Good.
Went to Housatonic Valley Regional High School.
And also graduated.
And graduated. I did go to Ball State University in Muncie, Indiana for about 2.5 years or so, and ultimately left that and went into the business world.
And you were at Muncie from 1976 to 79, roughly?
Approximately, yeah.
Okay. Now I'm going to ask you about your youth. Some of the things that you were aware of and doing in Lakeville when you were growing up. Did you always live in the house on Route 44, the peninsula into the Ormine Pond?
Actually, no.
Okay.
At first, we lived across the road. Mm-hmm. There's now a smaller house. The original house is burned, I believe. But there was a small house with a garage right next to a little alleyway that went between. Mm-hmm. And when I was a young child, we lived there.
Was that called Strawberry Hill?
The hill behind it, yes.
And why was it called Strawberry Hill?
I have no clue.
Okay.
Maybe it had strawberries on it.
That's what I'm thinking.
Beats me. I know at one time they say there was a dump up on top of that. So,
yes.
You know, there you go.
Okay.
But then everywhere around here there used to be dumps. Go up on Indian Mountain in the woods, you'll find plenty of them.
Oh, sure. When was the house built that I knew, which was
that
on...
One, you know. Well, that was really where we grew up. I want to say, causing me to stress my brain at this point, that I must have been 6 or 7 years old when we moved over to the other house, because we literally walked things
over
down the road over to the new house when it was ready.
So that would probably be about the mid-60s?
I'm going to say yes.
Okay. Was that spit of land that goes into the ore pond there, or was it man-made?
Part of it.
Part of it was...
was pushed out and made into,
Okay.
That was back in a day when you could basically do those things. Mm-hmm. Today, that is not the process you can follow any longer.
No. And that side of the road, as you're going towards Salisbury, the left side of the road, that area was called Pigtown.
Up in the back.
Yes.
And up in the back, where the Meehan Farm and other things were.
And that was actually a pig farm, was it not?
In all honesty, I don't recall it ever having pigs on it in my lifetime. They had cows up there.
Okay.
And they probably had some pigs there, but that was a reference that you always heard. So I'm going to assume at some point.
We acquired a ledger from a large pig farm in the 1918 to 1928, and I'm assuming that that was from the Meehan Farm.
I wouldn't be surprised. There again, as I say, in my lifetime, I don't remember actually many, if any, pigs. Mm-hmm. I'm sure most farmers would have some pigs.
Oh, sure.
It was all dairy cow up there at that time.
All righty. There's a small pond. We're going Route 44 toward Salisbury. There's a small pond opposite your house where you grew up.
On the right-hand side, yes.
What was that? Was it... a runoff from the mine?
That is drainage. The actual ore bed drains over into that.
Okay.
And then that goes off and eventually ends up down in Lakeville Lake.
Right.
It's, and the beavers build dams over in there because periodically, even to this day, we have to go over and break them because they start to back up the ore bed, and that's the only outflow it has.
Yep. Do you remember anything about the mine working or people that owned the Ore Hill Mine?
Well, the mine was never in operation in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. However, when I was in high school, I did an extensive research paper on the mine.
Which you haven't yet found.
Unfortunately, I cannot put my fingers on. I know I'm certainly sure I possess it somewhere. And I seems to me back at that time, then First Selectman Charlotte Reed had taken a copy of that, but I really don't know.
Okay.
And unfortunately, one of the people I should speak to has passed on, so I can't talk to him any further on it. I remember a lot of what I pulled up in the research. And
can you give me some idea of what you did when you were doing your research about that particular mine?
Well, yeah, there was a lot of studying done through going into the archives at the Scoville Library, mm-hmm. and just looking for things. Of course, unfortunately, in that day, we didn't have the internet as
yes.
we do today. One of the biggest things that occurred was a map, or a set of drawings, I should say, that were in the attic of John Rudd's house.
That his father did.
It's commonly known as Hollywood.
Yeah, his father was the architect that did the tunnel elevations.
Engineer, architect, engineer, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, when we found those were on a large board.
Yep.
And, of course, they were quite old at that point.
Mm-hmm.
We did take them to Fred Lubashier, Kuffel and Esser, and he had transparent positives made of them,
mm-hmm.
which is a type of copy, which I do possess today.
Good.
And those are the last known maps that showed the tunneling system. They were drawn in the early 1900s.
1904.
I should have brought them with me, but I have them.
Mm-hmm.
But they showed the tunneling system. And we did some looking.
Mm-hmm.
I know at one point back then, Don Malin had come and did some diving in a small pond on the other side of the railroad tracks because I had determined that that was where the main incline went down into the mine shafts. And they actually believe they kind of found it, but it was not one of those things you wanted to go into.
No,
so,
no.
But, you know, I know Don had did a lot of diving around the area.
He had done... he had one of those maps, and he had interviewed Sid Coles
mm-hmm.
using the maps, trying to find the main shaft and where the other pieces of equipment were. And we have a copy of the Charles Rudd 1904 map, as well as a transcription done from Don and Sid Coles' tape. So I'm getting familiar with that part. You went to Salisbury Central. Any memories about Salisbury Central particular? Or just that it was school and you got through it?
Yeah, it was school. We got through it. It was a great school.
Was it you or was it Brian that played Abraham Lincoln in Hope Mongeau's Fifth Grade?
Well, that was me.
I thought that was
that
you.
That would be me. Hope Mongeau's the one that started my political career.
I knew she was good for a lot.
So, you know, once that gets out, she may not have as prominent a place in town anymore.
Because I can remember, and I don't mean to be offensive, but you were short then. You were little.
Still, you know, only 5'7" now. So
and,
people think that's short.
You were short then, and you had this tall hat, and somebody said, "Why did you pick him? Why didn't you pick one of the taller boys?" And she said, "Because he'll know his script and he'll do a good job." And that impressed me, that she would go for somebody that would really do a good job. Which you did, by the way. I do remember the play.
I remember that one. You know, another play, I don't know if you remember this one, we did Hansel and Gretel, actually sang in that play.
That must have been Virginia Thompson.
I believe so.
I worked with her on that one.
So it's a good thing you know the school from that era, because you came in when I was a fourth or fifth grade.
I think you were fifth grade. And
I did that because I had played opposite the lead role with Sarah Gallup.
Oh, and what was your part?
It was Hansel.
Of course.
Hansel.
Oh, yeah.
For some reason, I remember that. And a singing role. It's like, yeah, do I really want to remember that? But at that age, you didn't care.
But at that age, you didn't care. And Virginia put together wonderful, wonderful things.
Yes.
I was privileged to work with her for 7 years. And a lot of prep, a lot of time. But it stood everybody in good stead because they were able to get up and, either perform or do public speaking without being embarrassed.
Absolutely.
And that's a life skill. It truly is.
Oh, it was, and it's funny as we talk about it, then things start to roll into your memory, too. And,
until
you actually have the conversation. But I recall, too, at that time, you didn't call it middle school like they do today. We went from the upper building
to the lower building.
That's what we did.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, I remember, too, that always when we were coming back from lunch, there would always inevitably be the fight between the buildings that Fred Romeo would come hauling down the hill to break up.
Oh, sure.
All of these things, which you couldn't possibly do today, it would be a completely different scene.
Uh-huh.
I remember as we headed towards the lower building, and this was always funny to me. Everyone worked at you, and you were convinced when you first went into the classroom of Fred Romeo that he was going to, chop you up and make you into cookies or something.
Yes.
Deadly afraid.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember distinctly, again, as you talk about the, I remember that class. Walking in and feeling this fear because there was this guy.
Yeah.
And he got up there and he had his large lab table at the front. And he was saying some things, but they weren't, they were more funny.
Yeah.
But you didn't want to laugh.
Because you were afraid.
And he did this silly routine of this. And he was walking down behind the thing, going down a set of stairs.
Uh-huh.
And, it was just, you were just, and
yeah,
you didn't want to laugh because you had been, I don't know why.
You'd been brainwashed.
Like that. I don't know why it was built like that, but you were terrorized.
Sure.
He was a great guy.
Oh, yeah. And he was a good teacher.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
But, these are the things that because you were not one of my pupils, but you went through the same time that I was there, that nobody can relate as well as somebody that was there at the time. And that's why I wanted to bring up the plays.
Yeah.
Because nobody would know now what was being done back in the 60s and the 70s.
That's true.
True. And that's as much history as anything else.
Because I graduated in 72, so that would be late 60s and in 70s.
Yep.
And, it's worthy to note, too, that we had a lot of students at that time.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Than they have today.
The classes at that time, there were at least two sections of fourth grade, and they were running 20 to 25.
Yeah,
and sometimes there were three sections.
Yes.
So there were a lot of kids at that time.
We had less building, too.
Well, yes.
They have much more building today. Back when I was there, the new gymnasium that sits today did not exist, and where there are now classrooms, that was the gymnasium.
Oh, yes.
And we occupied, the year you came to school, we were the first ones
in
to
the
occupy
new building.
the new building up off the edge of the cafeteria.
And now they've changed the lower building a great deal.
Yes.
And they put on that other addition now that looks like a factory to me that was done in the 90s.
Yeah, well, they did an entire overhaul to that lower building. And
I've never been in it since.
Back in our days, it had an auditorium down there.
It had an auditorium. It had a projection room.
It's all gone now.
Yeah, it's all gone.
We used to have our art classes down with Mr.
Bob Kosuski. Right.
Bob
Kosuski. Did you ever work?
The kids called him Turtle.
Oh, yeah. And then we had a teacher that he was dating that we called Frog. So it was Frog and Turtle. Did you ever work in his audiovisual club?
Probably, but it doesn't stick out in my mind.
Okay. Do you remember the, I think they were Friday night movies that Fred and Bob Kosuski used to patrol?
Vaguely.
Okay, how about Sock Hops at the Grove? Do Do you remember those at all?
Not really. I don't think I went to those things.
Did you go to the Grove in the summertime for swimming lessons?
We did take swimming lessons, but bear in mind, too, we lived right on the orbit over right. at our own beach. But
where
what was her name? I'm trying to
Jeanette Axelby.
Axelby, yes.
Yes.
That's, okay. We did have swimming lessons that way.
Yeah.
I know my brothers had been involved in the Little Leagues. Mm-hmm. I was not so much of a sports person, so I spent the bulk of my time from about the time I was 9 years old, being a businessman.
Now, that's the next part. That leads right into the next part.
That lies the problem. See, while other kids were in these activities, that just wasn't my shtick.
Tell me about being a businessman from the age of 9.
A businessman. About 9.
About, all right.
Crawl. It's, I used to be back in the days, because there again, this is one of those things that's disappeared as well, was the door-to-door salespeople.
Yes.
Because back in those days, it was very common to the Avon ladies who sold the cosmetics to beautify the women of the neighborhood.
Yes.
And the Fuller Brush Man.
Yes.
Actually, ours was a Fuller Brush Lady, my mother, but inevitably...
The kids went out to do it.
I became far more famous as the little Fuller Brush Man.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
I would... I had a bicycle that you would laugh at today. The Stingray bicycle.
Okay.
With baskets on the back. And I would have my suitcase of wares to demonstrate. Mm-hmm.
And I bought a lot of things from you.
Pedal from place to place.
Yeah.
And eventually, as things went along, and believe it or not, and I think many people today, their hair would stand up on end. As a young man at that age, I would go as far as Kent to do my sales on my bicycle by myself.
Mm-hmm. And it was not ordinary, but it was doable.
Oh, it's absolutely doable. But that, it's interesting because today you would never dream. In fact, parents would be hauled away if they let a kid go out like that.
Oh, yes.
Probably would have been, you know, child labor
neglect.
Your child.
And, yeah, sure.
And it was just not a, I wouldn't have thought about it.
No.
I was out and about. Mm-hmm. And people were ready. And, you know, it was basically a monthly tour.
Yes.
A monthly tour.
Yeah. And you were missed if you didn't show up about the time you were supposed to.
And I recall, too, that I would go with my mother to the sales meetings. They would have sales meetings for the area and the district.
Oh, really?
Which we would attend in Simsbury and sometimes West Hartford. Uh-huh. And actually, one particular thing, this is so silly I would remember this, but Fuller Brush at one given point in time came out with this little sweeper. That you could roll along the carpets. Mm-hmm. It was innovative for its time.
Uh-huh.
Again, something you would laugh at today.
Well, that's all right.
And I took this thing, and I was able to market this around here and sell it. Mm-hmm. And I was noted by the Fuller Brush Company, even published in one of their little brochures, and gave demonstrations at these district meetings. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I want to say I was 10, maybe 11 at best.
Yep.
And I wish I could find one of the flyers. It actually was photographed in one of the Fuller Brush flyers.
Oh, I wish you could.
For the sales thing. I would love to run across something like that again.
You were very good. You were persuasive. You were also persistent. And I can see you coming to my door, either at school or at home, with a beautiful smile, which you still have. And you'd hand me the brochure, and you'd say... And what are you going to buy now? I know you had a wonderful sales pitch, and you were so cute that you couldn't say no to this really cute little boy that had this magnificent smile, big brown eyes, and you just couldn't say no.
Well,
it worked too.
It did. I know. Years later down the road, folks always remember me.
Sure.
That have been around for a while.
Yes.
But they look at me and they remember, and I've had people say, you know, they used to have closets full of things that they just really didn't need, but they just had to buy it.
Yeah.
Was it possible to say no?
Yeah.
I think In reality, though, you know, the experience itself, and that's kind of what's sad about the way things are today, mm-hmm. helped to develop me. And
of
my
course.
Ability to deal with the public.
Yes.
My ability to be comfortable speaking to groups. All of this.
Mm-hmm. It
all evolved from that.
Sure.
I had no fear. I walk up to a stranger's door and knock on their door.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm here and I'm going to sell you brushes whether you like it or not.
You were good at it.
Of course, it didn't come out that way.
No, of course not.
Far more appealing.
Yes. But it was a way of developing your strengths.
Oh, yes.
And using ingenuity.
Yeah.
Managing your time.
Mm-hmm.
Being efficient. Handling the money.
Money, yeah.
Making the orders, sending them in, making sure everybody got their products, and if there was a complaint, you handled that.
Yes.
And that's a wonderful early childhood experience that so many people don't have today.
That's true. That's true.
And I think that you had an incredibly unusual opportunity with doing the Fuller Brush.
It certainly was. It certainly was. And that just, you know, that evolved out of just being bored. There wasn't anything that interested me
mm-hmm.
in the off-season.
So you never had an off-season.
I wasn't the athlete.
Yeah.
I didn't care about baseball or football. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to.
Yeah.
And
you weren't musical either, particularly.
No, I wasn't particularly musical.
Yeah.
And I like to study. I mean, it was all mental work for me, and that was a way to get out and do things and not be boxed up sitting around saying, "What do I do now?"
Yeah.
And like you say, it was a full experience. It was actually full business, back to front.
How many years did you do that, Mike?
Well, probably what, 4 or 5 years, I want to say.
At least until high school?
Probably in freshman year of high school. I think once I got past that, then it became...
Well, then you had other things.
There were new interests coming in now.
Yeah.
You know,
now, I have...
High school kind of interests.
That's the way it should be. The Fulco Project, is that something that was when you were in high school?
No, Fulco Project, that's in the last few years.
Okay, then we'll come back to that one.
We'll come back to that. You're jumping years ahead. Now.
Well, we don't want to do that.
Late years.
Is there anything more in your growing up through high school that you want to add before we move on to later years?
Talk all about high school. I mean, Hoosier Tide was, and again, no, it was much bigger. Many more
students
there. Then
yes.
there are today, and smaller buildings.
Yes,
smaller,
oh,
by far.
Oh, lots smaller.
By far. No, high school. I mean, high school was great. I was involved in the academics.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it was. Jack Mahoney, who was a great inspiration to me. God rest his soul. Jack was my mentor in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Really.
Mm-hmm.
He was the person I really looked up to, and he was responsible for the encouragement that was there to do a project like the one I did on the iron ore mine.
Mm-hmm.
He was with us in student government, where I was a member of the student council and inevitably president of it in my senior year. That's the one person who really stands out to me in my high school. Jack
Good.
Mahoney was, he was my mentor. You know,
and that's wonderful.
And that remained, and I was in touch with him, and then worked with him later on, right up to almost the day that he passed on.
Oh, my. Now, I'm going to skip over a lot of time, because you went to Ball State, you went to business, but I want you to come back to
Salisbury
as an adult.
Yeah, because when I left here, by the way, I was 17
mm-hmm.
when I graduated high school, and I went to Ball State University. I went as far away as I could possibly go, because I was never coming back to this place. Never. I want you to understand that.
Right.
Just want you to know that. I was never coming back to this hole.
But you did come back.
But I did. Not once, but twice.
Yeah. And why did you come back?
Well, the first time I came back, when we came back from Indiana, it was... to go back into the trades. I had liked doing carpentry work.
And while I was in Indiana, I was involved in different levels of retail businesses and corporate level processes, if you will. And the Midwest was becoming less appealing. Economically, it was moving in the direction of being a mass disaster because it was at a time when automotive industry was starting to condense, and it was a huge economic thing in Indiana.
Yep.
And we had full plants closing down, thousands of people being laid off, you know, in a town just like that. Mm-hmm. And it was becoming a tough world. And at that point in time, I was really starting to yearn for some reason to come back to that hole that I left. And I had the opportunity to work with my father and learn the carpentry business. So we,
I bet he was a good teacher.
Oh, absolutely. So we packed up our gas. Matter of fact, what happened was my wife and I, we got married, and the next day we had our stuff in the vehicle and we were on our way to Connecticut. So that was our honeymoon, driving from Indiana to Connecticut. Hallelujah.
Well, it could have been worse. Someday I'll tell you about mine. You didn't always work in this area when you became a carpenter. You were down in the Panhandle area of Connecticut for a while.
I was later, yeah. I worked with Dad for, a number of years. I can't recall how many until inevitably I spun off on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked around on my own for quite some time, and it was an individual here in town who worked in the city. Mm-hmm. Was up here on weekends. I had created quite a rapport with them and did all their work and stuff on their weekend home, and they decided they wanted to locate closer into the city but not be there, so they bought a house in Greenwich. Mm-hmm. And I went down there to do work for him. I didn't really want to go, but he made me an offer that just was too insane not to go.
Yeah.
And eventually that turned into one job after another. Yeah. And
word of mouth.
Inevitably, I decided to move down there. Mm-hmm. Because it just seemed easier than traveling down during the week.
Yep.
That was my line of thinking then. In retrospect, I should have stayed the way I was and done the traveling. It would have worked out better. Yeah. You think the cost of living is high here? Try out Greenwich. Go ahead, try it out.
Yeah. No.
It's insane.
Yeah.
The only thing more insane is New York City itself. So.
Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah, we were there, and we were in Greenwich for, I think, eight years or so. While we were there, we had our daughter, Amber, mm-hmm. and it was coming just about the time for her to go to school. And here again, there was another thing, economics playing in.
Yeah.
That was when the bubble was starting to burst.
Ooh.
And all of this plethora of work that was just everywhere in Greenwich was now starting to fade away,
uh-huh.
and jobs were coming to a halt without notice.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't so happy. Plus, my little girl was getting ready to go to school, and I'm looking at my neighborhood grammar school, which is hundreds and hundreds, just the grade school, K through 6. Forget about the huge middle school and the thousands in the high school.
Just too big.
And, yeah, it became,
just
I said,
big.
You know what?
Let's go back.
So we packed up and we came back to Lakeville. This is it.
And
this
would,
moving again.
This would be about 2005, 2006?
She'll be right about there, yeah.
Okay.
Zamber was born in 2001. Another motivating factor, too, was 9/11. And
yeah.
When you live that close to it.
It's scary.
And there was an impact there. I mean, that's a day in my life I'll never forget because of the town that I lived in at that time, Greenwich, Connecticut, went from being this bustling, hustling to being almost a ghost town for a day.
Mm-hmm.
Literally.
Mm-hmm.
While everyone waited.
Yeah.
And everyone said, what the hell is going on here? And it's right here next door. So. But, you know, I think one of the key things was getting my kid back into a system. And I said, hey, what better system than the one I went through?
Yeah.
Someplace where we knew.
Makes a difference.
Hometown, whether people like it, all the kids can say whatever they want. Yeah, I said it when I was leaving at 17. I was never coming back to this place. Never. Ever.
But your life changed.
Life changed.
And you know, you're smart enough to change with it.
Yeah.
And go with the flow.
Yeah.
Instead of being so rigid, I said I'll not do it, and I'll not do it. No, I admire that.
We could have gone to different places, but you know, there again, for all the criticisms I will make too, and I've been out there criticizing this community rather loudly in the years gone by.
Not you.
Not me. But your hometown, and a town like this has an attraction. And though sometimes it's frustrating when it doesn't want to grow and things, it's still home. I mean,
it is home.
And I think for anyone, and this is something I see is going away these days too, that people don't really have a hometown. Well, you know, this is a hometown, and it drew me back.
And I'm
proud to say that this is really my hometown. I was born in this town. Well, Sharon, close enough. Most everybody was born in Sharon.
Yeah,
They couldn't help it, you know. Sharon was the hospital.
You didn't have too far to go.
As it will be. Except for my second oldest brother. They were shopping in Great Barrington, and they didn't have a choice. So
they were in Fairfield. Fairview. Okay.
He was born in Massachusetts.
Oh, dear. All right. Now, when does this Fulco project come in? This must be...
Fulco project came in... What was that? 4 or 5 years ago?
I think
I
so.
Say? And actually, that was something I was working with Marshall Miles at CATV6 and HDD Radio, and he originally was working on that, and because the plate was so full and all, I ended up taking over the project.
All right,
the project had kind of come to a stall.
What is the project?
And the project was looking, and this is ironic as hell. The project was looking at the history of sports. It was talking about the regional high school.
Oh, that's right up your alley.
Yeah, that's what I say. It was ironic as hell because that was the last thing I wanted to be in. And I worked with them to put together the videos and to produce a few DVDs on that.
Ah. Okay.
We worked along because we had the crew we had was Ron Dower, Ed Kirby, Jack Mahoney. Who else was there?
Beersdorfer?
No, Beersdorfer wasn't involved in that.
Okay.
Oh goodness, another guy in Canaan. Forgive me, I can't.
I wouldn't know.
Can't spit his name out right now, but you know, interesting that Kirby, who I worked with on this, just. Not that many years ago, was my principal at the high school.
Oh, yes.
Ron Dower was a teacher at the high school when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Jack Mahoney was, you know, the guy who meant all things to me.
Was he at the time the teacher that, you know, Jack Mahoney worked up to being principal, but
right.
At the time
Jack
you were there,
was,
he was a teacher.
Yeah. Jack was in the...
he was English,
what
he?
They now call advanced placement. We called it the humanities, I think, at that time for the, you know, the kids that... had it going on upstairs.
Sort of.
Interesting way to put it. Here we are years later, and we have to be politically correct. See, back then, you didn't. You just said it.
I know.
Yeah, back in the day when, you know, the kids stood and smoked in the porticos at the school, and the teachers went into the rooms upstairs, and they opened the door, and the smoke poured out. Can you see that today?
No. All right, civic responsibilities that you have handled, boards and other things that you've been on.
Well, actually, really, the only board I've really served on is right now I serve as an alternate on the Planning and Zoning Commission. Most of my civic has really been in the way of being a mouthpiece for people who don't agree with the
Democratic
current
Party.
Philosophy, you know, if you will. You know, I happen to be a Republican, but I haven't been. So a bulk of time that I spent doing commentary on the area, I was not a Republican. I had actually become unaffiliated and divorced myself from the party. But mine was more on the issues and what's going on in town. Whether people like or not, it was because I have concern. And
but you've been
I
in the,
see it a different way.
You've been in the Republican Town Committee.
Yeah, the Republican Town Committee I've served on multiple times over the years since the 1990s. I worked on campaigns and stuff when John Harney ran for first selectman. We worked with him.
Mm-hmm. John Harney or Elise?
No, John.
John ran for first selectman? I know Elise did.
Yeah. John did years before.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm so far non-political.
There you go. It's for me, it's been in and out with different things.
Yeah.
But, I've been a political activist. Let's put it that way. That's been my role in town, to be the...
Gadfly.
The gadfly, yeah. That's been the term that's been used sometimes. Other people would call it a PETA.
Well, whatever. If you get too comfortable, you need somebody to shake it up a little bit.
You know, for myself, I've been on the ballot a number of times.
Yes, I know you have. I know you have.
And today, I am chairman of the Republican Town Committee, so mm-hmm. for what that's worth.
You have done many, many different things, and most of them extremely well, I'm sure. Is there anything else that you'd like to add to this interview before we close?
It's not a lot I can think of. I mean, if we're talking about the history of the towns,
mm-hmm.
I think the biggest thing I want to note to people, and it has to do with change, and it's something I hear a lot today, don't want things to change, but things have changed markedly, and they do all the time.
Yes.
From the day that, you know, when I listen to stories from my mother and father of what these towns looked like when they were children, mm-hmm. and they go back to talking about things that I never saw, like a bowling alley and other large things that weren't here when I was a child. But when I was a child, each of the villages, Lakeville and Salisbury, were viable villages with everything in them, and they've changed markedly. So, you know, while the town keeps a certain feel,
mm-hmm.
it's constantly
evolving.
Mm-hmm. And I think people need to note that and not be so afraid of it and think it's going to spoil the ambiance, because it's still here.
Yeah.
It's still here. And I think people need to be mindful of that, that it's going to change and gravitate, but it's always going to be a nice little small town.
Where people care about one another.
People know each other, watch out for each other, or should. And that was a big thing when I was a kid, too. I know we're going to wrap up, but, you know, it was another thing. When we were kids, if we went out and did something we should not have done, believe me, it was not going to be a secret for long.
Uh-uh.
It was going to be home before you knew it. And you would know when you walked in the door and you got the look. It was like, oh, boy.
Yeah.
Got nailed again.
Yeah.
And
did it in school,
knew,
you got it at home.
Yeah. Even though we knew in this place you weren't going to get away with it, try it anyway. You
know? Oh, sure. Well, that's youth.
And, yeah.
That's youth. But, absolutely.
It's a great place, but it will change and it will evolve. But that doesn't mean it's going away.
No. That's the purpose of doing the oral history, because I don't want it just to be the 80 and 90-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
I want it to be the teenagers, if I can get them, the 20s and 30s, the 30s and 40s, the 40s and 50s, the 60s and 70s. I want the gamut, because, yes, it has changed, even in the short amount of time that I've been here. Businesses have closed. Businesses have changed hands. Things have come into the village. Things have left the village.
That's true.
It's changed, but the core of caring, looking after one another, being responsible for yourself and your actions, that is still here.
Still here to a certain degree.
Yes, to a certain degree.
That's one of my biggest fears. And, you know, if I can say anything that stays on the record, that's the one thing I want to say. When you come to these small towns, become part of that.
Yeah.
And become that guy. Forget about the others. That's what we're supposed to do. We're not in the concrete jungle.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to watch out. I mean, it's still a place, even to this day, I still feel safe. I leave my keys right in my vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
I just have never reached that point. When I was a child growing up, we didn't even have keys. We came home from school, you walked in the door because the door was open.
Sure.
It's always open.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the way it should be. But that's all part of watching out. So when you come here and you know, you decide you're going to live in your little world and all, because you come here to get away, that's no good.
You have
because to. All the part of this is for why, and that's what keeps us safe. That's why we don't need a police force or any of these things, because we all know one another, or we should. Yeah. And it's not, I'm sorry to say, it's not like it used to be, as intense as it used mm-hmm. to be, mm-hmm. that people knew each other, because there's, everybody's off into these little lives today, which, yeah. you know, distract us from remembering where we are, which is a great little place. And, you know, I'd like to see us go back, you know, as I was growing up, even in my younger years, we had festivals and things we don't have anymore. Mm-hmm. We used to have the carnivals down yes. the ball field. I mean, yes. you know, again, in looking at the historical content, the firemen always look forward to the big carnival.
Oh,
we
yeah.
had the parade in Lakeville and all. Mm-hmm. It's all gone.
Sure.
You know, that's what's sad to me. Mm-hmm. More so than, forget about the changing face of the village and the fact that there's no grocery store in Lakeville, and none of this. The fact that we don't have all of these things, so much of it which has changed because of liability insurance and all this yes. other hoo-ha.
Yeah.
And that's what it is to me.
Yeah.
That have taken away one of the most precious things of a small town is these gatherings where everybody went.
And it was all, everybody was on the same level.
Yeah, they were just drinking beer over at the beer tent, going out and gambling at the spinning wheels and riding the rides.
And just having a good time.
Just having a good time. No pretenses. Mm-hmm. We're all the same here.
Yep.
Kids making a float to go on the parade, and mm-hmm. so much of that has, and that's the thing that bothers me most, is those things are gone.
Yeah.
But.
Good point.
Unfortunately, you know, it's a changing world, but that's some of the glue that binds small towns. Some of the small towns still have their carnivals and stuff, but many have abandoned them.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, and even ones, Cana with the Reds, getting weaker, mm-hmm. less attendance. Is sad. That's community.
A good place to end this.
The one thing I felt, yeah, when I was growing up, that's one thing I felt. There was a very, very strong sense of community in that era. It was a small town, and everybody knew what everybody was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody watched out for each other, which made it a safe and wonderful place.
Thank you very much. Wonderful way to end it.
Thank you.